Now this morning, I want to talk about a story. It's a parable told by the Lord. It's found in Matthew chapter 20. You might want to be turning there. I'll have the verses on the screen behind me as well as we go through them. Matthew is the only writer who presents this parable to us. So you don't have it in Mark or Luke or John, but only in Matthew chapter 20. It's a story about the owner of a vineyard and the people who come into the vineyard to work there. And I think there are quite a few points that can be made, and I want to try to bring out, at least the best that I can, the points that I think are relevant and applicable to us. And maybe as we go through, you'll think of something that I left out, something that would add to it. And so feel free to ponder it on your own as well. But go with me for a little while through the first 16 verses of Matthew chapter 20. Laborers for his vineyard. Beginning with verse number 1, where Jesus says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard." So here's an analogy Jesus is making, as he often did, a comparison. He's saying the kingdom of heaven is like this. These things I'm about to present to you in this story, a parable where he would call upon everyday objects or elements of their lives back then that everybody would have understood, but he would make a spiritual application of it. And so he's going to talk about this vineyard and what happened in the vineyard, the people in it. And he's saying that this is like, this has some point or points of analogy to the kingdom of heaven. And so I'm going to take that as a reference then to, we think about his kingdom on earth. The expression of his earthly kingdom is the church. The church, that which he promised to build. On this rock I'll build my church, that which he purchased with his own blood. Acts 20 and verse 28. Another way to frame it is the kingdom, of which he is the king. And so the church, the master of the house, of course, would have to be the Lord. He is the owner of all, and in this story, we can think about God as the one who owns the vineyard and who calls workers into the vineyard. A vineyard that has no workers in it is rather pointless, isn't it? A vineyard that has no workers will soon deteriorate just into a wild state where the plants are not being cultivated and it's not going to produce like it should if it just goes wild. So it needs care, it needs upkeep, it needs attention. And the master is not the one who does all the work. He made us in his image to expend labor to his glory. That is our purpose here, is it not? To live lives to the glory of God. Upon which God says, but there's immeasurable reward attached to it. But you're obligated to honor and worship God. Every human is. Because we're in his image and he made us to do it and he is worthy. But he goes out and he finds workers. He's not the one who does all of the work. He does what we cannot do for ourselves, as we sometimes mention. He wants laborers. You know, labor is in the word. Work is in the word. He's not going out looking for people and saying, "Come on into my vineyard and bring a lawn chair and some sunscreen, because I want you to enjoy some time there, just kicking back and relaxing for a day." He's looking for workers. I could ask myself, am I here to contribute? I ought to be. I ought to look at the congregation of which I am a member as a work in progress, and I'm a part of the work, and that my contribution helps it to make progress to the glory of God. That I'm not here, just to be served, but to serve. That's what the Lord said He came here to do. And He exhibited it perfectly for us. Let's move on to verse number 2. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, He sent them into His vineyard. So everybody has an understanding about what's expected. These people who are approached early in the day, maybe we can assume, around maybe 6 a.m., and they are told, "Will you come to my vineyard and I will give you a denarius," which is a foreign sounding word to us. It is a foreign word, a foreign currency. It was a unit of money back in that time. As I understand it then, a denarius was what a normal worker would expect for a day's labor in a place like this. This was the average that you would get paid for putting in a day's work. "I'll give you a day's pay for a day's work." That's what the owner of the vineyard is saying. And this is not just busy work. And it is in a specific place. It's a specific kind of effort. The master does not say, "Well, I'll give you a denarius. Go out there somewhere and do something." He says, "I've got a particular place. It's my vineyard. And there is a certain kind of work to be done in the vineyard. There's a goal that's being, pursued. At the end of which, there's supposed to be a harvest of the fruit of the vineyard." So it's a specific work in a specific place. Think about the fact that God calls us into His kingdom, or into His vineyard, if you will, into His church. And that's the realm in which we're in, the master's realm. Now, as we sang a little bit ago, this is my Father's world. He owns it all, but most of it currently is in darkness. 1 John 5:19 says, "The whole world lieth in the evil one." The only place you're going to find spiritual light is in the Lord's house, which is also His kingdom. Which, if we think about it in terms of this analogy, this parable, the vineyard into which laborers come. Let's go to verses 3 and 4. "And going out about the third hour, He saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to them He said, 'You go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right I will give you.' So the third hour, as time was reckoned," if we think early, let's just assume that the ones who were called the earliest, about 6 o'clock. Well, the first hour would be 7. The second hour would be 8. The third hour of the day would be 9 a.m. They didn't have precise timekeeping mechanisms like we have on our wrists today or on our phones. But mid-morning, He goes out and there's still people there. They're standing idle. Idleness is not a virtue. God didn't make us to stand idle. He did give us whatever our individual lifespans are, and He does give us the obligation to redeem the time or make the best use of the time, because the days are evil. He puts us here for purpose, and we're not supposed to be squandering our situation and just whiling away the hours and the days and the weeks and the months and the years and not contributing to the vineyard. We've seen pictures, haven't we, of maybe back from the Depression, black and white pictures, maybe from the 1930s, and men, maybe in long lines, and just a terrible place in the economy at the time, and not enough work to go around. But we've never seen that in the Lord's vineyard, where, we just need to close the door, turn people away, because we don't have anything for you to do. Have you ever seen the church in that kind of a situation? I haven't. I dare say you haven't either. Well, we've just got an overwhelming amount of workers, and we've run out of kingdom work. I've never seen it. I think I never shall. And it's just not going to happen. There's always work to do. There's always room for one more. And we welcome one more in. And we welcome the contribution of all faithful Christians. But if you're standing outside, if you're outside the vineyard, or by analogy, if you're outside the kingdom of the Christ, you're in the wrong place. And whatever you're doing, even if your hands are as busy as they can be, spiritually speaking, you're whiling away the time. You're wasting the time because you're not in the vineyard where the fruitful work is going on. If I stay outside of Christ, then it matters not what I devote my time to. It's all for naught. The fruit, if you will. How about the fruit of the Holy Spirit? That's produced by those who are connected to the vine. That's produced by Christians. And I've got to be in the Lord's house in order to produce that fruit. But he says to these people who are standing idle, I still want you in the vineyard. Now the day's already started. Maybe 3 hours, maybe a quarter of the day has already passed, but you're still welcome. Come on in. Now he doesn't promise them a denarius, does he? He says, I'll give you what is right. And the judge of all the earth always does right. He never does anything other than what is right. So even if they're not told a specific amount, and they evidently already understand, well, I'm not going to put in a whole day of work because part of the day is already gone. But he said he'll do me right. He won't mistreat me. He won't cheat me. And so they come into the vineyard. Verses 5, 6, and 7. So they went, going out again about the sixth hour. And the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing. And he said to them, why do you stand here idle all day? They said to him, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you go into the vineyard too. So he goes out early in the day and he gets the first workers. And they're going to work all day long. He goes out at the third hour, 9 a.m. He goes out the sixth hour, which would be noonish. He goes out at the ninth hour, which would be, middle of the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he's continually inviting. People are continually accepting the invitation, coming to work in the vineyard. And then it says he went out at the 11th hour. So if 0 hour is 6 in the morning, and so the 12th hour being 6 p.m., the 11th hour would be 5 in the afternoon, and evidently the idea is that, the work day is over at 6, and so if you come in at the 11th hour, there's only 1 hour left, and the work day is over. You want me to come in when the day is nearly spent? And he does. He does. Notice that there's only one vineyard. The master is not going out and collecting workers and saying, well, I got this vineyard right here, but I've already got people working in it. I got another vineyard across town and another one over here and out there. They're all coming into the same place, aren't they? And there's plenty of work to do in the authorized place, the one vineyard that's owned by this master. You don't have to worry about it being too crowded. Just like we don't have to worry about running out of things that we can do to honor the Lord. You don't have to worry about the church. There's too many Christians around here. I'm tired of being around so many Christians. I mean, would that everyone were a Christian. Can you even conceive what the world would be like? What if everybody on your street were a Christian? Every time you went out shopping at the grocery store, everyone that you passed was a Christian. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. In an ideal situation, If everybody in the image of God was giving glory to the God who made them, no, it's always going to be the opposite, where those who are striving to follow and honor the Lord are in the minority, oftentimes in the extreme minority. Jesus said it would be that way. Few are they that find it. Lord, help us to be among the few. The few. And I'll be okay with that as long as I'm in that number. I can't control how few it is or how many it is, but I want to be in that number no matter what that number is. The Master keeps going out. He keeps finding people who aren't contributing, but he sees the potential that's there. And so you come in. I know that, well, the day's half gone. I'll still take you. And, you know, a thought is, though it's not really, you know, brought out directly in the parable, but the Master knows what he's going to give these people. And it's going to cost him the same for everybody. For the ones who came in early on, and for the ones who came in the middle of the day, and for the ones who come in and the day's almost over, but he's going to pay them the same. So from his viewpoint, the cost to him is the same regardless of the amount of time that was contributed to the good of his vineyard. And isn't it like that with the God that we serve? You know, what it cost him for somebody. You know, think of somebody who obeys the gospel in his youth. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, you ought to remember your Creator in the days of your youth. The earlier the better. The earlier you can get your feet set on God's path, the better in just so many ways. But, you know, here's somebody, and they don't learn of the gospel until they're in their 30s. Or here's somebody else, they come to the Lord and obey the gospel in their 70s or in their 80s. And we rejoice every time, regardless of the age of the one who came to Christ, but for every one of them, it cost God the same. Didn't it? Cost the life of his son on the cross. Whether you come to him early in your life or whether you come to him late, the price to God was the same. And he's willing to provide that price. That, as Brad said, such a massive price that was paid for us. Even if you come in at the 11th hour, the Master is overseeing the process. And he's going out and he's bringing in fresh faces. We think of the gospel, the invitation. You know, it goes out to all the world. God says, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. He calls us by his gospel, 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 14. And you remember towards the end of Acts chapter 2, it tells us that the Lord, what did he do? He added to their number daily those who were being saved. Well, how about the next day? Well, somebody was being saved. The Lord added that to the number of the saved. Well, yeah, but they didn't obey as early as the ones who came in last week. But that doesn't matter. What matters is that they came in. That's what matters. Young or old, sooner or later, what matters is you got here. You came in. Let's look at verse number 8. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first. So he called them in one order. He's going to compensate them in reverse order. But the work continued all day long, didn't it? For everybody who came in, they worked from that point until the day was over. For those who got there early in the day, well, they got to put in a whole day's work. And just because others were coming in, the master didn't say to the first hires, well, I've got some fresh help over here, so why don't you take off the rest of the afternoon? We'll use the new workers. No, there was plenty for everyone. And the ones who came early, they worked the livelong day. And the ones who came in when the day was half over, they worked the rest of the day. And the ones who came in at the 11th hour, and there was only 1 hour left, and they worked that whole hour. And then the day was spent. And it's time for payment to be made. And the master does right by every one of those workers, doesn't he? He doesn't cheat any of them. He doesn't, mistreat them and say, well, I know I hired you for a day's work, but I'm not going to give you a day's pay. Come back tomorrow. We'll settle our accounts tomorrow. No, you worked the day. I owe you for what you did today. I pay you now at the end of the day. He doesn't change the terms. He doesn't do a bait and switch. He wasn't dishonest to any of them. Their labor was not in vain. Their labor carries its own reward. Regardless of how long you were there, the labor carries its own reward. Labor that's spent in the greatest of causes for the greatest of masters. And 1 Corinthians 15:58, you remember that verse? We need to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. And then Paul said, you know, your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, I think there's a lot of work that goes on in our world that ultimately you could just say it's in vain. And I know that because we're in the flesh and we live in this world and we have to do with things of this world. The house that I live in, if it's still standing when the Lord comes back, it's going to be burned up. But that doesn't mean, well, I don't want that house. I've got to live somewhere. You have to live somewhere. It's not wrong, to build a house, to buy a house, or to be involved in the things of this life. As long as I understand, I've got my perspective right, and I understand what's most important, which is God and the things of the Lord. And more important than building something out here that's going to burn up one day, whether it's a building or whether it's the accumulation of something in my bank account or whatever, if I let that be the focus, I'm working in the wrong place. I'm putting my labor and my treasures somewhere other than with God. And he knows that. He sees that. And that will be labor on my part that was in vain because I wasn't laying up treasure in heaven. But in the Lord, your labor is never in vain. All of these laborers now are going to be compensated. Verses 9 and 10. And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now, when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. So these people who were the early hires, who had worked all day long, and they see how this is beginning to go with the people who, well, he was only here 1 hour. Look, he got a whole day's wage. And you know what they did? They made an assumption. They made an assumption that was not based on anything that the master had said. They made an assumption for which they did not have a promise. The owner had never told them that he was going to pay the ones at the 11th hour something different. He kept his word, He kept his agreement, but they thought they would receive more. The master is not obligated to accommodate all of our concepts of, you know, what would be fair in some given circumstance. We all have an idea of fairness, don't we? But you know, I might think, well, some set of circumstances, well, this would be what would seem fair to me. Maybe Brother Randall, given the same set of circumstances, he says, well, this is what would seem fair to him. And maybe we don't exactly agree, but we don't have to on a matter of subjective opinion. But I don't have a right then to take my subjective opinion about what I think is fair. I, knowing as little as I know, having as little experience as I do, who am I to tell the owner of the vineyard, this is what would be fair here? And so who am I to project my concept of fairness onto God and expect Him to conform so that everything plays out according to what I thought? Well, this is the way I would have done it. God's not me. And my subjective views are not bound on Him. He's going to do right. And I need to live with that and honor that and even pray for that. Your will be done. It's not about me and my will. It's about Him. They thought they would receive more. You remember one time in Luke 17 and verse 10? Jesus said to His people, this is how you ought to think. After you have done everything that you were commanded to do, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty. That's our place. It's the place of humble servitude or even slavery. If you will, that's not too strong a word. The New Testament Greek will use that word, doulos. It can be translated, you know, less abrasively as the term servant, but it can be accurately translated as slave. That's what we are. We come to God as His slaves. And we ought to be honored to be that. What more could you want? We who by our sins have separated ourselves from Him, who if we were earning our real wages, the wages of sin is death, and if He gave us our real earnings, that's what we get. But in lieu of that, He reaches out a hand of mercy and saves me from eternal hell with the gospel of Christ, He paying the price of His Son's own blood so that I don't have to get my wages that I earned. But there's no higher place that I can rise to than being His slave. And I'm honored to be that. And there's nothing better that a human can be than a slave of Christ. If you're in the vineyard, be glad you're in the vineyard. Don't come up with your own opinions of how things ought to be and then think, God would do it the way I would do it. It's just an honor to be in the vineyard. In Romans 12 and verse 3, Paul said, none of us should think of himself more highly than he ought to think. But isn't that what these people are doing in this parable who were hired early in the day? Aren't they thinking of themselves more highly than they ought to think? Aren't they in fact thinking, well, now that I see the 11th hour hires getting a denarius, I think my labor was worth more than that. Because surely I get more than they get. My contribution will be worth more and more highly compensated than theirs. They who only contributed an hour. We ought not think of ourselves more highly than we should. And so, verses 11 and 12, And on receiving it, that is, these people who worked the whole day, and they got a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us. You have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." And so instead of mustering gratitude for the master bringing them into his vineyard and letting them have honorable work and not having to stand idle all day, and then at the end of the day, instead of having nothing, you've got a day's pay for a day's work. He did exactly what he said he would do in paying you that. You agreed to it. You came into the vineyard with the expectation you would be there all day. You came into the vineyard that morning expecting to bear the burden of the day. And when the sun was at its zenith and you're getting hot working out in the vineyard, you came in with that expectation. There was no bait and switch. There was no pulling the wool over your eyes. There was no deception involved at all. But now you're grumbling at the idea that others in the vineyard are being treated on an equal basis with you. And you think, well, you ought to be up here and they down here. If you ever feel like grumbling against God, don't check yourself. Check yourself and stop. I expect God has to hear, us complaining from time to time. I think as we mature in Christ, we should be working on our character development so that we're less and less given to complaining, really, about anything. I expect God hears us in our prayers to Him. That maybe something is pushing us or pressing on us, and maybe we're talking to God in prayer about how hard this is, and offering a complaint about it. And I'm not saying that that's always the wrong thing to do, but it's one thing to talk about or complain about a situation that I'm in or that surrounds me, but it's something else to criticize God. It's never the right thing to criticize the Lord. And so the Lord, by analogy here, I'm taking the master, the owner of the vineyard, being representative of the Lord Himself. You don't criticize the master. And you certainly don't criticize him for doing what he said he was going to do. Makes me think of the judgment day and how many people at the judgment day are going to find out that God meant what he said in his book. He wrote it, and then he told us, now this is going to judge you on the last day. And then I get to the judgment, and I lived my life as though, well, I thought, well, it wasn't real. He didn't mean it. I wasn't really supposed to be that fastidious about the gospel. I thought different. My idea of obligation, or my idea of fairness, my idea of what I deserve. And yet the master did exactly what he said he would do. And they grumbled about him because of it. They were only here an hour. They weren't here. How many hours I put in? Think about somebody who obeys the gospel young and somebody who obeys the gospel in their later years. Now, we rejoice at both, but you should never envy the years that somebody else got to spend living out in the world, living outside of the vineyard, living outside of the kingdom. So I should never, if I've been in the kingdom for 40 years, I shouldn't look at somebody, say, in his 50s, and he just now was baptized into Christ, and I shouldn't think, oh, all the years, all the decades, he just got to live it up out there. He just got to give himself to the pleasures of sin got to do whatever he wanted without a care or thought about God. Now he's my brother in Christ and I'm glad, but I kind of envy. Here I've been trying to be careful. I've been trying to be righteous and godly. I've been trying to be God's faithful servant. There's nothing to envy about somebody in the world. And we want them to come in. But the longer you're out there, you know, the more scars you can accumulate, the more sins you can commit, and the baggage that goes along with the consequences of sins committed. There's nothing to envy about that. We ought to want to be able to give to God the biggest part of our lives that we possibly can. Come into the vineyard as early as you can and give him the rest of your service, the rest of your days. Verse 13, 14, 15. But he replied to one of them, Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? It's interesting that he calls the worker friend still, even though he's complaining. He doesn't say, well, you lowly servant, shut your mouth. You're just here for contract labor, just to work for a day. You mean nothing to me. Be gone. He calls him friend, but he stands up for his own reputation and reminds this day laborer, this is my vineyard. This money that's being handed, this is my money. This is my work you're doing. Can I not do what I want to with what belongs to me? If I want to be generous, if my generosity does not comport exactly with your idea of what was fair, but I did for you what I said I would, so there's no dishonesty, there's no cheating, but I want to be extra generous over here, is that not the master's prerogative? Well, evidently it very much is. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Don't turn on the God who gives you every good gift in your life. And then the final verse 16. And I guess it all comes down to this short little pithy saying, this little nugget of divine wisdom. If you want to, what's the point of it? We'll take this. Take this as the overarching lesson. Jesus says, so the last will be first, and the first last. For those who come into the vineyard of the Lord, it's not about jockeying for position. It's not about, ranking each other and trying to keep up with the Joneses, as it were, and to be better than someone else in some kind of a conceited way. Now there is a way where we are in one verse told to outdo one another in showing honor in the way we treat one another. If you want any kind of a good competition in the kingdom, well, there's the good kind. There's the God-honoring kind. If you want to outdo me in the way that you treat your brothers and sisters. And if I'm trying to reciprocate and outdo you in the way I treat my brothers and sisters, well, that's a good problem to have then, isn't it? Is not really a problem at all. But Philippians 2 and verse 3, Paul says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Now remember a few verses earlier, these people who were hired early in the day and what they were thinking? The master has made those 11th hour hires. He's made them equal with us. And we don't like that. We don't think that's right. He's treating them equal to us.
And Paul is saying in Philippians 2:3, well, in a way, it's not even about thinking, okay, we're all equal and being comfortable with that. He says what each individual Christian needs to do is to act like all the other brothers and sisters are better. You treat your brethren as though they are more worthy than you. Now, if I made it my ambition to do that, which I should, to treat all of you as though you're more worthy than I, you're more deserving than I am, better than I am, and each of you reciprocated to each of the rest of us, no, I treat you as more worthy, you're more worthy than I am. Well, Paul says that's the way Christians need to look at each other. That's the way we need to treat one another. And if you want to be the greatest, there's a little something in the back of your mind. Well, I want to be the best. I want to be the greatest. If you want to be the greatest, it starts at the back of the line. Go to the back of the line. And the people who are back there because they chose to be back there because they're counting others as more worthy than themselves. And Jesus says, well, that's the first. Those are the first in the kingdom, those who are willing to humble themselves in the eyes of the Lord. He will exalt us in due time. Well, that's the parable. And I want to say in conclusion that I know, and Jesus doesn't intend that we take that this analogy to the kingdom, it's got to be like the church just in every particular. Every detail has to be. The point is, the last will be first and the first last. The truth of the matter is even better than, you know, the arrangement of an owner who hires people to come work in his vineyard and then gives them their wages. Or maybe gives them their wages with some generosity on top. The truth is so much better than that. And I understand that to be rewarded at the end of the day, at the end of our lives, it's going to be a matter of grace. It's not a matter of, well, I put in my hours in your vineyard, Lord. Where's my paycheck? Pay me what you owe me. He doesn't owe me. He doesn't owe me. Now, he wants my efforts. He doesn't owe me. It's a matter of grace. But the reward is better than anything that you can measure in some currency. In fact, it is so incredible, so astonishing, so jaw-dropping. Jesus says, if you just be faithful, you conquer. By the power of God, you conquer sin. You conquer the devil. You live a faithful life. You die in the Lord. I don't give you a denarius at the end of the day. I'll invite you to come share my throne with me. Think about that.